You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Lyda Winfield. Lyda, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
So, Lyda, this is our second interview. We talked in 2018, and now we're in 2020, in the middle of the pandemic. We talked about your choreography and also about you as an educator last time, and a number of things about your work as a dancer. So I guess to begin with, I should ask, you know, how are things faring in the pandemic? You're a teacher, you're teaching at Middlebury. How has that changed your, you know, yourself as an educator? We'll talk about you as a dancer and choreographer, of course. But yeah,
thank you. Well, again, so nice to be here, and so nice to be with you, and particularly a second time, it feels like just really lovely. You know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, I think the pandemic has been challenging for everyone in varying degrees, you know, depending on who you are or what your situation is, that level of crisis is bigger or smaller, but we're all impacted by it. And I was teaching at Middlebury College when the pandemic began, and it was actually sort of an amazing moment of events, because I had I can't remember if we spoke about this before, but I think I was in the early stages of making a group piece called Imaginary that had there's five of us total in it, and it just happened to be that my collaborators who live all over the country were at Middlebury in residency with me at the college, and we were, you know, supposed to perform that Friday and Saturday night. And so it was, you know, Tuesday afternoon, and my father actually went to the ER, and I tried to drive the hour to go see him and to get into the ER, and they had had quarantined him, and out of concern that he had COVID. And so then I drove back to Middlebury to my rehearsal, in which I learned that the campus had been closed and students had been told that they had to leave by Friday. And then the performing arts series contacted me and said, we have to have your collaborators leave. They need to get on airplanes immediately. And so all of those things happened at sort of the same exact moment. And I say it like that partly because it turned out that my father did have COVID. And then he died.
And I'm so sorry.
Died of COVID. Yeah, thank you. I mean, absolutely sort of excruciating. And so I had this, like, then very intense 2 weeks. It took him 2 weeks to die, where he remained in the ICU that whole time. And so I think maybe you also have had this experience, or others that are listening, where something is both a global event and something that's deeply personal. And so I was having this sort of strange experience where, like, the school was closing and people were feeling so afraid, and then how it was directly inside of my family. And so what that's really meant, in addition to having sort of all of my, like, touring work for the summer be canceled, that it also meant that my family, we were trying to figure out about what is this. How do we grieve this human being in a pandemic when we can't be together? And sort of what does that actually kind of all look like? And so all of that is sort of stirred up for me in your question. So it's like a long answer to say that teaching online in the scheme has actually been one of the easiest things that's happened.
Right.
And in some ways, maybe this is like a funny thing to say, I think nobody dreams of teaching dance on Zoom, but it also feels to me like we get to be creative with the tool, and it's a way to, it was and continues to be a way to care for ourselves in the community. And given sort of my witnessing of how scary and debilitating and that COVID can be, then the sacrifice to be online feels totally appropriate.
And that's such an interesting perspective. And again, I'm so sorry to hear about your father. So part of what was also being organized is online memorial and funeral, right? Because at that point you couldn't have a funeral?
Well, it's funny, actually. We're going to do it in a couple of weeks. So tomorrow actually marks that he'll have been dead now for 6 months. And I think, you know, my family sort of like lives all over the place. And I think we'd been kind of holding out thinking since he died in March, we sort of had this naive notion that maybe we could be together or plan for something in the summer. And so it sort of had this tone of waiting for that. And then just kind of recently decided that that was clear that that we couldn't wait and that it didn't feel good to wait anymore. And so we're actually going to do it in early October on Zoom.
Wow, still on Zoom though. And so how has this affected your work? Have you been making new work? It's great to hear that you're teaching online, because that sounds like an incredible challenge. But right in the context of what you're talking about, that was one of the easier things to do. And so what are you working on in terms of new work, new collaborations?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, I think, again, I don't know if you have this experience, but I feel like for me, making sort of comes in waves. And I often, you know, my work is really content-driven. I really make performances when I have something to say, or I want to think about something, or I want to discuss something. So I'm really driven by something that I think is worth discussing or analyzing. And so sometimes that means that there's large gaps between my work. And so this woman, Crystal Brown, who is also an educator at Middlebury College, and I have decided that we'd sort of toyed for many years about making a duet. And the state of the world actually has sort of like led to that at this moment. And so it's actually sort of a nice aligning, if you will, partly because we both are here in Vermont, right? So nobody's traveling in that context. So it's nice that we live down the street from each other, and we've been working actually in her garage, which we have sort of, we call the garage studio. And then we're making a piece that will premiere online, and it will actually premiere in January through the Flynn Center for the Performing Arts, that they're our sort of first host, if you will. And the work is really an investigation into our similarities in many ways, if you will. So the work is called Same But Different, and on the surface, Crystal and I appear very different. She's African American, and I'm white, and she has been the chair of the dance department for a long time, so she's sort of the boss, and I'm not. And we sort of, I think on the outside, people often think we're very different, and a lot of that is really about race, and some of that is also about position. But then underneath, I think we've really come to the decision that we're quite similar, even though we've had very different lives. And so our work is really looking at the ways in which that we are same and the ways that we are different, and sort of celebrating that and putting it together. And it feels like a commentary on many of those things. We're the same age. We're both 42. My My mother died when I was a teen, and her father died when she was also quite young, and then her mother recently died, and my father recently died, and we both grew up in small towns, and sort of there's all these different things that are similar between us, including that we both have a great Aunt Vern, super strange and funny.
Aunt Vern, you said Aunt?
Aunt Vern, that's right, yes, Aunt Vern.
That's great.
And so we're recording our process in the garage, and we've done this neat thing that I think feels so fun and smart for the time, where we've made this thing that we call a process pass. And so someone could, for a $100 donation, have access to the process of us making this work and get a 5-minute video once a month of clips that this film artist that we're working with, Tori Lawrence, has edited. And then we use a smaller clip of that also just to promote our work. Again, with this idea that the performing arts world is changing, and also, you know, we're thinking about the racial injustice of the world and sort of responding to both of those things to make this piece. And that feels really lovely.
I love that. Yeah. I interviewed Crystal earlier this year, also in the middle of the pandemic. Well, just when it was starting, I think in May. So that's fascinating and so exciting to hear. So to talk a little bit about how that gets out into the world, you're producing this work together. It goes out into the world in short clips, and people have to kind of subscribe to it. Is that how that works?
Well, that's just kind of our fundraising tool, just to share with folks if they're interested in financially supporting and to see part of the process. So it sort of comes out in these chunks, and again, we call that a process pass. But the larger work will be, you know, a full performance, but we perform it online. And so someone through the Flynn Center would buy a ticket, and that would allow them Zoom access to the performance. Which they would come to at a set time and watch kind of live, if you will, to see the show.
Well, that's so cool. That's exciting. I'm so glad to hear that. It's, you know, it's really interesting how artists are using the medium of Zoom also to kind of continue working. I mean, artists mm-hmm. that are working performance or movement. So in this collaboration, if you can talk any more about it, how has that affected it? Because you're in a sense making now movements, dance, choreographing for the camera, really, more than a live audience. I think that's a very different approach.
Yeah, well, and you know, Crystal and I are both talkers and storytellers, and so I think part of what this particular medium, and maybe actually this particular piece, I could envision a time when we are less afraid of COVID, or COVID has changed, and we gather in a theater, and that Crystal and I could perform it then too. So we sort of hold that in the back of our mind, but we have done a lot more talking and storytelling as a way to build this work. And so we actually do, like, we interview each other as part of our, you know, sort of ritual each time that we meet. And oftentimes that is just an audio, so you can't even see us in that, but just as a way to document it. And we've done a good amount of also thinking about that there's kind of a very clear front, if you will, opposed to you might be an audience member on the side of us, or recognizing that it creates much more of a flat facing in many ways. But other parts of it, it's funny. It sort of just feels like, oh, this is just how we make work now.
Right, right, yeah, it's so interesting and also exciting to hear, of course. And so is there, you said in the beginning of this interview, you had some questions for me. Is there anything you want to ask me?
Yeah, well, it's funny, you know, I guess I was thinking about you and without really knowing you and having now spent two times on the phone and was imagining that you are an artist yourself and that you get to talk to all these artists. And it made me have an assumption that these dialogues have contributed to the way that you think about art making. And so I was just feeling interested in you in general. Are you an artist?
I am an artist, yeah.
Yeah, and what's your medium, or what does that look like?
It's really social practice. So, you know, my wife and I were in the Whitney Biennial several years ago giving out hugs and fruit washings and kissing non-visible wounds on people's bodies. So it started like that, and then we've continued to do different types of social practice. We did something called the Museum of Non-Visible Art, where you had to kind of imagine a work in order to make it exist. So you know, these are conceptual works, but they have usually something that's very easy about them to enter into. So in that case, this was a project that was started several years ago also, but that one allows school children that we used to give classes to, you know, as visiting artists, and I mean like 8th, 9th, 10th graders, coming up with, you know, learning how to make conceptual art by just writing 75-word text to describe a painting or to describe a sculpture or to describe a performance. Mm-hmm. And that was quite powerful. And, you know, what kids can do, it was a way of, you know, getting them into an idea-based way of thinking. Like just to give one example, there was a school we were working in Greenwich, and, you know, the kids were coming up with all kinds of ideas, then we had them collaborate, and one kid did one. He said, yeah, this is a performance that I designed. And he said, and the way it works is, he said, in order to get into a classroom, he said, you know, it's a little bit about my experience because I have, I don't know, OCD and a few other things. He said, you have to step in every single square, linoleum square on the floor. And if you accidentally step on the line with your heel, you have to go back to the beginning and start over again. He said, so you'll probably find it's really hard to get into the door. And he said, and that's my experience every day. So, you know, things like that, but I don't know if I took too long in answering your question, but that's the kind of work that I do.
Yeah, I guess I mean, sort of what I hear inside of that is that they're sort of making bridges as ways for people to enter art making or art thinking and welcoming them. I guess that's the way I sort of translate it.
Yeah, and the interviews, you know, arguably are part of that too. I did a lecture last year at SBA, was asked to do a talk by the chair on interviews as social practice. So, that's not something, normally these interviews, I don't think, yeah, this is part of, you know, my art or our art. My wife and I are collaborative, but I think, of course, it is. And and so, you know, just because I'm an artist asking questions that probably wouldn't be asked if you were an artist, or I wouldn't talk as much when you're asking me a question now, certainly, about this. But yeah, that certainly affected this series dramatically.
Yep. Well, and it's kind of, I guess what made me think about it is, you know, just how nice it can be that we're influenced by each other. And so I was sort of envisioning that you have had this neat experience where you have heard all sorts of folks think and talk out loud about what they're cooking up. You know, and I think I also just, and I guess I also was sort of hearing in your voice the, like, the door opener, right? I guess I think of that sort of part of what an interviewer does, right, is welcome someone else to say things, which is sort of sounds like that's part of what also happens with you and your wife and in your artwork. And maybe part of what made me kind of hear it, that's, you know, it's a goal of mine as well, is to just think about how to make something accessible or have different folks be able to enter inside of it, whatever the thing is, the strangeness or the commonness of it. And in some ways it feels like that's part of what, like, Crystal and I were trying to do in this, like, oh, we just have to adapt to the time, to the moment, both in the of the political climate in all the different ways, including that means we're going to perform online, right? So I think part of my interest was partly that I was sort of hearing that connection.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think, yeah, it's interesting how online activity has changed. I mean, for me, I also run a school for artists online where I teach a good amount about professional development to some degree and a variety of things. So, of course, now the issue is Zoom, and one of the things we do is studio visits. So these are mostly visual artists. So we're on Zoom, and let's say there's five people lined up to do a studio visit. We do five at a time or five in a session. And it's the first thing that I've done on Zoom where, as someone said the other day, she said, you get kind of a buzz from this. And, you know, so there's visual artists all on Zoom. They're all unmiked. Someone's showing their work by using their phone or their laptop or walking around their studio, and everyone's just jumping in saying, can you get closer to that painting? What's the medium there? And it's for the first time, and I do a lot of Zoom talks and lectures with other curators and teachers, but it's a little bit of a high. There's something, there's energy there that's palpable. You know, it feels like a conversation, and it's also cool. You're following someone's camera through their house and saying, wait, stop, what's that there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I took a bunch of dance classes this summer, partly as a way. I mean, obviously, in March when the school just went remote, and then teaching on Zoom was, you know, sort of just out of necessity. Let's like do the basics. Like, you know, I didn't know how to do a breakout room, or you know, I kept putting the camera at funny angles where I felt like, oh, I don't know why you can only see my knees. You know, whatever the thing is in teaching, but you know, we've all gotten smarter and learned about how to do it well on Zoom. And part of my research was to take a lot of dance classes this summer online, and on numerous occasions had the experience that you're speaking about, which is it felt like, oh, I'm actually dancing with you. Like, oh, this feels exciting. This feels real in a way that Zoom doesn't always.
Yeah, That's so interesting. Lida, it's wonderful talking to you about all of this. Before I ask you the last question, I also want to say to the listeners that, of course, there are links in here to find out more about the current collaboration that you're doing with Crystal Brown. Can you tell me a little bit more about perhaps how the audience can get involved in that, in terms of supporting it and in terms of attending it? Because there will be a link in here for them to learn more.
Yeah. So I'm actually in the process of sort of updating my website, so it actually might be more easily accessible on Crystal's. So crystalbrown.com, on her website, under Invest is a page about the process path and a page about this work. And folks, if they were interested to learn more, could read about it there, or if they were interested in donating to have a purchase pass, then they could do that through that same page as well. And folks would also just be welcome to send me an email. I'm always happy to connect and always happy to speak more, and could be reached through my website if that was of interest.
Okay, I'll put your website on here and also a direct link to that page on Crystal's website. And
thanks.
What are you reading now? I'm always interested in what everyone's reading.
Well, it's so funny. Maybe I don't know if you remember this, when we spoke 2 years ago, you know, I only came to read as a grown-up, and so I don't really identify as being a reader. And so it's not an easy answer for me. But reading doesn't actually feel connected to me to joy, or sometimes even to learning, but I'm really trying to practice. And so just recently I bought All About Love by Bell Hooks, but I'm only maybe on page 3.
And that's because how are you reading that? Why is it so difficult to read?
Yeah, so I'm just incredibly, incredibly dyslexic and didn't learn to read until I was a grown-up. And so it's not that I'm unable to read. It's just that reading is not connected for me with pleasure. And rarely is it even connected as a way to access knowledge. Most of the way that I feel like I have come to learn about the world is by listening, by talking with others, by doing things with my body. So reading is just not at the top of the list of ways to take in information.
Right, thanks for saying that. And now I remember talking about this in the last interview. I think that's a wonderful book you've chosen, All About Love. I haven't read that, but an extremely popular book by bell hooks, and that sounds interesting. So thank you again, Lida. Thank you so much for talking with me today, for your work. Again, listeners directed to the links here, which is your site, as well as the page on Crystal's site to know more. Lida, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you. So nice to be with you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.